and that made the possibility of getting better standards much, much better. What we used to do with those people, the first time they came to visit us, we would give them a copy of the outline development plan that we saw as appropriate based on the terrain, etc. And then we'd ask them to go and employ a traffic consultant. We'd give them their outlets where they would be limited to on the arterial roads, and we would then say to them, well, until you come back with a traffic generation model of your subdivision, we can't really give you any further answers. So they would employ a traffic consultant, and then they'd come back to us and they'd tell us, gee, we're going to put 7,000 vehicles a day out of this intersection. We're going to have to widen that road, aren't we? And so they were convincing themselves and telling us what we already, of course, knew, but we found that that was the simplest way of convincing them. The other cells, where there were multiple ownership, we had to go into more detailed planning of the road systems for those. And on a number of occasions, we had to allow temporary access onto arterial roads, which were then closed later as the formal accesses on an adjacent property were developed. So there were a number of things like that that we had to work through in the development process.
How many years were you with the City of Berwick?
15 years. I retired in the October 1988.
And did your responsibilities or your position change during that period?
Responsibilities really didn't change. The position changed slightly because of a decision back about 82 to look at unitary management. And it caused a few heartburnings, I think, and problems at council level and at officer level for a while, but eventually, because there are divisions appearing, I made an offer to council to accept unitary management but set down conditions which the council accepted. And so we were able to proceed without too much disturbance. It was just probably 12 months of a bit of unsettled I think the office, etc., was a bit unsettled, and council was a little unsettled, I think, at the time for 12 months or so. But that eventually righted itself. And we kept all the processes going so that it didn't reflect really in the work the city was doing, and that was, I think, the most important part.
What different events are you particularly pleased to have been involved with during those 15 years? You mentioned previously protecting the waterways in various areas and...
As part of the planning process, the corridor that could develop was really constrained between, to the north, the SEC power lines, and to the south, the Hallam Valley, a very sensitive floodplain. And in the Doveton area, there'd been a lot of work done along the Yemmering Creek, where there'd been several drownings in the early days before the city was formed, to make that waterway safer, with children living in the area, etc. The concern was, of course, that once you do that sort of thing, you put a sewer down and then you put a drain down, you totally change the water table in the environment, you lose the trees or things that were there, and unless you make a conscious effort to do something about it, of course, it's usually only rubbishy growth re-establishes because of lack of water, and usually a lot of weeds survive in that environment more so than acceptable plants. So we looked at these sorts of things as part of the process, and we purposely recommended in the foothill areas, particularly around Narre Warren North, Harkaway, etc., that this all be low density development. And I must say that in particular Peter Tempest had done some extremely good work previously in his days with the Shire in developing sand filters, and particularly the study of the correct sands, and which follows the principle of the good water supply sands, or water supply filters. He'd done some very good work there, and with strict supervision had proven that the sand filter system would work very well. And so council supported that with all-purpose septic tanks for the low-density areas and sand filters. We were able to put a high-quality water back into the streams from that sort of development, maintain the water table. Well, that meant then that we could maintain as urban streams, Troops Creek East, Troops Creek West, the system that comes down near Hessels Road, and also the Grasmere Creek north of Dandenong. North of Berwick. The Eumemory Creek was pretty much committed to the system, but its origin, of course, is up west of the Listerfield Reservoir, and also as a spillway flow from that, should it ever occur. That's from Listerfield Lake. Those areas could be retained in a semi-rural form, but once it reached the urban area in Hallam-Doveton, of course, it was already committed to underground pipe systems in the main. The whole aim of that was to give us urban streams and not concrete drains.
And you're involved in one of the first projects to move mature trees, you said?
Yes, we had recognised the problem that its main attribute really is not buildings but the streetscape and the trees. And trees, like humans, have got a lifespan, and one day you've got to do something about it. The same as burying people, you don't actually bury the tree but you've got to dig it out. And during a research study tour I did through the Local Government Engineers Foundation in 1977, I came across processes in England that they used there, and I found that even in Europe they were using the English tree removalists to do the work there, shifting established trees. So we got the information, and we found a fellow here in Victoria, who were up in the Dandenongs actually, who'd done his training in England and had a small set of the right equipment to use to move established trees. So what we did was used him because of his experience, and we managed to convince the Country Roads Board of the day that they should look at these sorts of systems to overcome traffic problems, moving existing established trees. And they agreed to fund an experiment in Clyde Road, where we moved 13 trees over to the centre of the road reserve, which would have had to have been removed otherwise when that road's finally duplicated. And they were done successfully. You spent about 3 years preparing the root systems and then a special mechanism, a collar that goes on the tree, and the root ball you've prepared with the roots cut and then fibring out. That's cleared and bagged, and then you put a chain mesh or net or bag around it, and fix that to the collar on the tree, which is thumb screwed into the tree. And then the whole lot can be picked up and moved. But you've got to work out a balance of the weight of the tree and the canopy and the root ball, that you're going to be able to lift it either with one or two cranes. And, your big cost is in the crane, so you need more than one set of this equipment so that you can move two trees at a time and then spell the cranes the next day, so you halve your costs. A few management things in doing it the right way.
And what was the project where you moved the first lot of trees?
This was in Clyde Road, Berwick, between Mansfield Street and the railway. And of course since then the staff were kept on doing these sorts of things, moving established trees, the big tree, for example, near the library in Endeavour Hills, that came out of the road reserve in Heatherton Road. We moved several trees out of there. There are a number of other trees from private gardens in Berwick. There are five around the city offices here. Two at the right near the one right near the front door. One of the others had to be removed eventually. But they came out of people's gardens in Berwick to give us some established trees around the offices when they were first opened. So we had established trees right from the start. There's a variegated Pitostrum near the front door that actually came out of Councillor Giles' garden. So a bit of this was done for two reasons, to give us some established trees and to make sure that the skills were not lost to our staff doing the work. Following this, once we proved the point, we didn't lose one of the trees, though they were moved in the middle of a drought, a five-year drought period. We've established a reserve of oaks and elm trees that are now about 9 years old up on the top of Wilson Hill, in the buffer area adjacent to Wilson Botanic Park, so that should we have to do the idea being that should the city have to do anything about the bigger trees in Berwick, given time, that there will be trees that are 20, 30, 40, 50 years old that can be picked up from there using this system and put in to replace any of the larger trees that have to be removed in Berwick. Thus retain and keep turning over the streetscape in Berwick and maintaining the actual vista.
Are there any other projects that stand out in your mind over that period?
Oh, I think there are many, many projects that really get a lot of satisfaction from. I think the overall thing, planning was seeing its success. And of course the sub things that come with that are many and varied. The establishment of the city centre was a real milestone too. We had three developers who council expressed the desire that there ought to be a city centre located in the vicinity of Narre Warren, which is the geographic centre of the city. These three developers all wanted the city and the city centre for the obvious advantages that it gave to the economics of their development. And we were able to point out to council that the decision had to be made on a town planning basis, because obviously where there was more than one party interested, the other parties would appeal. And therefore the decision had to be as easy as possible to defend. The council accepted that, and we at officer level did a study of the three alternative sites, and though the differences, because they're all close to Narre Warren, the township itself, for that reason there are a lot of similarities, but very marginally when you considered location, traffic aspects, centrality in particular, three of the key issues, that just marginally it came out in favour of the site that these buildings are on. Of course it was subsequently challenged, and the decision of course eventually had to be made by the Town Planning Appeals Tribunal of the day, and we had to sit through 19 days of hearing, and the decision eventually was council's decision was eventually upheld, and think it was indicative of the fact that the council we found were pretty practical, provided that we did our homework and gave them the full advice and the best advice, and they were very supportive.
Were there particular benefits of this site?
Well, each of the developers made offers that would to council that would benefit the community, that would make their site maybe more attractive. We actually cashed out the values on the advice of the valuer of what all these different offers were, and they cashed out to within $50,000 or $100,000 in value of each other. But the benefits in relation to this site that the community eventually received.
Should be right now.
Okay, well, I'm doing this from memory. It was 42 or 46 acres of land, additional to 11 acres that we already had from open space adjacent to the properties in the Fountain Gate residential area. And so that gave us sufficient land for all of the developments the city would require, and with it adjacent to the proposed shopping centre. As well as that, there was $500,000 provided towards the building of the city offices on the site. The complete intention there of the developer was to, and he asked council to bring forward the building of the offices, which would considerably assist the establishment of shopping centre itself and help to promote it. So he saw it as being a benefit to him, but of course it really enhanced the early building of the city offices on the location. So the ratepayers considerably helped in the reduction of rates over a long period of time as far as the land required was concerned. $500,000 towards the building. The building was designed here, and it was done as a project management project with Jennings, and we established a town square adjacent to the shopping centre, which is some 80 metres square. Nothing written in the book, but when I did overseas study tour, I visited many town squares in Europe and in England, trying to rationalise what it was about them, and I paced them out time and time again and came up with this about 80 or 90 metres, and finally came home to me with the new towns out of New York, Columbia and Bristol. Columbia has a vast town square complex like a park, nearly bigger even than the one in Palmerston North in New Zealand. So big that people get lost in the park system and they just don't relate at all. But at Reston there, it's about 80 metres square, and even the town lake system comes into the square, and the kids sail up and, in their little yachts and get off at the steps in the square and go and buy their ice cream and go back and get on their yacht again. It's intriguing to see, but what the issue gets back to is that about 80 metres is the distance at which you can recognise people on the other side. And when it gets bigger than that and you can't recognise a person across the square, it can be longer, but if it's wider than 80 metres, you don't recognise people, and therefore it loses its identity as a square. Just one of those little snippets of trivia.
How did the Max Pawsey Reserve come about?
Oh, I don't know really.
Was that upon your retirement?
It happened just after my retirement.
And was there ever any idea of calling it Holly Green after the original park?
No, there wasn't really. Holly Green went back a reasonable time, but it wasn't really one of the very old farms that had come down with one of the traditional families. John Lloyd inherited it from an uncle of his. Actually, the old Holly Green house was removed, and he, in about 1939, he built the house that was on the site up here and used for the evolution of the city in the bicentenary year, but then was pulled down subsequently for the development of the extension of the commercial centre. But I think probably one of the other major projects that I've been happiest with is probably the happiest with is Wilson, the establishment of Wilson Botanic Park, which I've still got an interest in.
Do you want to say a bit about the background to that project?
Yes, probably for recorded history. It goes back to the Shire's day when I must pay quite a lot of credit here to Ron Chambers, the Shire engineer of the day for the original Shire. Ron had the foresight to require at the time the original Wilson family had been quarrying the Wilson Hill on the entrance into Berwick for many years. They themselves were actively involved originally, and this was the parents of the original, of the current George Wilson. And upon the death of the old people, the property was divided between the two families, the Wilsons and the Henrys. And a dividing line ran across. Now, the area that was being quarried at the time was the Henry property. And the original quarry started somewhere around the border, boundary of the two properties, partly on the other Wilson property at the back. And during the Shire's day in the 60s, there was an application made to extend the quarrying back into the back part of the hole in the late 60s. And Ron Chambers, as part of the negotiations for them to get a planning permit to extend the quarry back there, which was right adjacent to the town, they put some fairly stringent requirements for, particularly for those days, but they wouldn't be considered that today by any means, on the quarrying there, and that the site, once it was quarried out, had to transfer to the Shire, who at that stage purchased it from the Wilson, from George Wilson, for £1. Giving him the lease back rights and the right to quarry that land. The title not coming to the council until such time as quarrying ceased. That eventually occurred in 1978, as I recall it. And the actual quarrying ceased about 2 years before, about 76. Yes, I'm pretty sure it was November 1978 the title came over to the city, of course, at that stage, with a proviso that it had to be maintained as a park. This was part of the original agreement. Maintained for use as a park and called Wilson Park. And so, in part, the rules of the game were set. But of course, the only access we had to the site was on the tongue of land that ran down into Ann Street. And when you got up to the actual quarry site, you just had a vertical drop into the quarry. So it wasn't really accessible at that stage. We looked at options, and we had the adjacent development on which had been owned by the owners of Bayview Quarries at the time. time, who quarried that under licence for a period from George Wilson. They bought the adjacent subdivision, which was existing actually, and put a lot of overburden on it. You wouldn't allow them to develop that land until they removed the overburden. So subsequently another person bought the property and wanted to develop it. He being an earth-moving contractor, it was quite convenient for him to put his equipment in there. The overburden was removed and it gave us a sloping access then into the back part of the quarry. We then had some discussions with the Henry family. They at one stage made an application to use the front part of the hole for a tip. Actually had a health department licence, but of course they didn't have a town planning permit. Well, the health department had determined to issue a licence. And so at that stage we forced the issue and they lost the appeal and hence couldn't use it for those purposes. The upshot eventually was that the city had to purchase the front part of the land, which from memory occurred in 1982. It was about that time when we were away at a weekend at one of the Waterworth Chalets, I think it was O'Shaughnessy, that Councillor Jan Bateman the day asked me, had we given any thought to a botanical park? And I said we had, but there were several sites, and what she ought to do was ask us for a report on it, which she did at the next meeting. And so we produced an analysis of the alternate sites, which included land adjacent here, land on Narriwarra North Road, and that site. Some land near Hessels Road, I think. But anyway, there's a detailed report there somewhere in the records. And of course, it was pretty obvious that the Wilson one. I'd always had in mind that that would be the one because council were committed to the back 40 acres anyway, maintaining it as a park, and if we could eventually get the front, then, as we just got about that time up here, it was the obvious site, and so that was established, and then it was a matter of doing a bit of walking and thinking around the site. We produced got council to agree to employing consultants, looking at it on the basis of applying for seeding grants. We originally applied to the Victoria 150-year celebrations and didn't succeed in any funding, but I think our plans included that main lake being called the Centenary Lake, and that happened to stay on the plans when we applied for bicentenary funding. And we got $64,000. From that, and that was the seeding grant that got things eventually started. But the important thing was having some design work done up to that stage. And we employed Scott and Furphy to do that, to produce a concept. And then once it was a go, we then re-employed them to design the detail stage one and two to get the parks done. And the first major project was to move a mountain, the hill at the front. Had to be moved over to provide for the car parking system. Otherwise you'd have parking encroaching into what would become some of the best parts of the park. So the first major project was to pick up a hill and move it over 30 metres. But anyway, that's a bit trivial.